You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
Back in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Man, I wanted so many White Claws as I was sitting there waiting on my windshield to get fixed. But I abstained because it was Wednesday afternoon and I'm not an alcoholic, but I do love me some White Claw Hard Seltzer. Please drink it responsibly. Pick up a 12-pack of the Black Cherry, the Variety Pack, the Vodka Sodas, the Surge, the White Claw Premium Vodka. They got something for everybody. Please drink responsibly and support the people who support us. White Claw Hard Seltzer and Cherokee Distributing locally. We appreciate their support as always. Well, Bob, Deion Sanders sure was tweeting yesterday.
That dude, man. He just can't help himself. Got to have the last word.
It's what we talked about yesterday in terms of him feeling like he's keeping it real and being authentic to himself. But at a certain point, you have to stop and think, like, hey, you're no longer that young, brash player. You're no longer that Neon Deion primetime that should have been maybe left in the you got to leave primetime in the past, and you can still be Coach Prime if you want, but it felt like yesterday it was more of the primetime player mentality, and like it's still a head scratcher for me, and like I just see it all over the internet now, just everyone kind of coming together to root against Colorado, like punching down and arguing with FCS players. Quote tweeting like an FCS player's stats with like, Lord Jesus, implying that this guy's stats are just so bad it makes you scream out to the Lord. Like what's the benefit there? I still don't understand. It's one thing if it's Shador, because you give Shador a little bit of a pass. Like I know yesterday I was talking about, hey, you're the head coach or you're the quarterback. You gotta be more of a team leader. But at the end of the day, he still is a 21-year-old kid. Should he be better than that? Should he be more mature than that? Sure. But he's still in college. And I got to be honest, if I was in college and I was driving around and I was a star, who knows how I would be acting. But I don't think the same applies for Deion Sanders. I don't think you get to say, oh, he's just a kid. Like, you got to kind of know better at some point. And I'm not trying to tell somebody to be humble. I'm not trying to put somebody in their place. I'm just saying, man, like, what are you doing?
I think it's compounded, too, with the fact that he's pulling his in his mind, he's defending his son, but he's pulling his son into it, which, again, you know, like you said, he's a kid. You expect a little bit of this stuff from him, but from Shador, but, you know, then Deion's basically not only kind of rationalizing it in his mind. The whole thing feels tawdry to me. I don't like it a bit.
Shador should be better. Shador should be better, but I'm not going to crush him near as much as his dad, who has taken that to the extreme and just, you know, putting a target on their back. Like at the very least, if you don't want to be humbled by the media, if you don't want the fans to win, if you want to respond to the haters and you want to be yourself and celebrate and send your tweet about how people that hate you actually love you, they're just jealous or whatever the hell he was trying to say with that in terms of people obsessing with him. I get it. Whatever. Bleep the haters. We're in an era of hate and diss tracks and be yourself. Whatever. Get it. But at a certain point, you're going past braggadocious and you're just becoming like a little psychotic. You're becoming just a little crazy when you realize what you're doing to your actual team. Because people liked beating Colorado last year. I feel like that's going to go to a whole different level this upcoming season. You're inviting your son to get absolutely obliterated behind what should be an improved offensive line, but we don't know how it's going to mesh.
It's brand new.
Yeah, it's going to be brand new. Yeah, it should be better because last year's was so bad, but we don't know if it's going to be good or not. And like Shador, man, like you're putting a target on your back. making some college kids mad. And if you do that to enough people, like, somebody's going to take a cheap shot at you. Somebody's going to hit you. Somebody's going to want to put you in the dirt. And the coach and your dad's not making it any better for you. From just a perspective of a coach and a leader of a program, you're making things tough on you. You're rotting checks that we know your team can't cash. Professionalism aside.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that's my question is, I guess if you can't monitor and manage your own kid, how are you going to manage and monitor a team, right? And that's the thing. It's like, I would have understood this. I wouldn't have condoned it. I would have understood it a little more if this kind of behavior was happening when they were standing 4-0 and feeling themselves last season. But actually, they're on the other end, man. They're a sinking ship at the moment. And I don't know, maybe he's just feeling he's kind of rallying the troops. But it's just the whole thing's a bad look.
There's a part of me that started appreciating it yesterday, though. And this morning when I went and I went through Coach Prime's Twitter, he's got a lot more retweets now. Like, he's trying to, I don't know if he's trying to, like, clutter the timeline up and, like, get the hates off of the very top of it. He's retweeting all the positivity about his program and some random fans that are standing with him. He's retweeting some of that. But he didn't delete them. He's standing on business. He's not deleting them. There's a part of me that's like, you know what? I would be mad if I was a Colorado fan. I'd be mad if I was a parent of a player at Colorado. I'd be wondering what the hell we got ourselves into. I'd be worried about that. You saw a recruiting analyst, basically, or it was a college football personality at least, talk about how just unprofessional it was and how Deion's doing this, and fans were like, hey, this is, you're going too far. You're putting your own opinion in it. And then that guy kind of clapped back with, well, this is actually from the number one receiver's mother. And it was like a statement about basically, like, we are now seeing, like, Colorado's character, and, like, my son will never go there. So, like, you're hurting yourself there, like, making yourself look bad when it comes to trying to recruit players and build up depth. Because Deion Sanders is making it clear, like, yeah, we're going to make fun of you if your stats aren't good. It's going to be hard to get people to come voluntarily be backups if you're cutting freshmen and you're making fun of players who are maybe taking a little bit longer to develop. It just seems so head-scratching. But again, there's a part of me that appreciates a good heel. And I got there and I was like, you know what? It's making the sport more interesting. So I'm ready. I'm ready to clock in this season. I'm ready to put on my hard hat, get these tweets off, and just become a big-time hater. I'm ready to do that. I'm ready to go to war against Colorado this season, and that's good. I like sports hate. I like sports hate. I'm glad to have some in my life.
It goes back to what I was talking about yesterday. So imagine this scenario. It's almost unimaginable, but if Tennessee had their football coach or their basketball coach acting out the way Deion's doing, how do you think Danny White would handle it? He would intervene, right? This is the other thing. I'm starting to hold their AD responsible. It's like, take this guy aside. You have no control of this, clearly. That's what's going on.
Danny likes to trade a couple jabs, but he hasn't gotten any full-blown, like, social media wars, right? He took on, was it Dan Walken he quote-tweeted one time? Yeah. Or he, called that guy out with his sources. He's taking a couple of small jabs, but yeah. You're 100% right, and Deion made it a point. I don't know if you saw. He made it a point to say that he was sitting next to his AD yesterday.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, he's like, hey, these Big 12 meetings that we're at, we're learning a lot about the conference, and thanks to, tagged his AD, we're sitting here together going over some stuff. So he made it a point to be like, hey, this AD's cool with the way I'm acting.
That's incredible, man.
The Big 12 meetings are very informative. AD Rick George right next to me receiving all this great info at CU Buffs Football. So made sure to throw him under the bus too. Implied that, hey, they're sitting there laughing as Prime is talking about all of this and making fun of players on social media.
Prime's just showing him his phone, like, check this out. This is what I'm going to drop here in a second.
My favorite is people pulling out old tweets, like positivity tweets from Deion that were like 2 months ago. This one is literally 2 months ago from, like, the day. Can we please stop killing each other and tearing one another down? Can we take that same passion and desire to kill and destroy folks and use it to build, support, and promote each other? Can we? What's stopping us besides hate, envy, jealousy, and ignorance? And now we just got him rolling around in the mud with kids transferring to Austin Peay.
I don't know if this hits the same when you keep talking about hate and jealousy and envy. Like, you're not that program. You're not Georgia. If Kirby Smart was talking like this, I'd be like, okay. All right. Like, yeah, you know what? You're right. You do have the best program in college football right now. People are jealous. People are envious. If it was Kirby Smart, I think we'd be like, okay, yeah, we can't really shut that team up on the field. This is a team that won how many games last year? Four? Mm-hmm. What the hell are people jealous about? Were people jealous of Deion Sanders, like when he was a great cornerback and a great player and he was rocking the gold chains and rapping and living that lifestyle? Yeah, probably. Like, Deion was really cool. Like, no one's jealous of Deion at this point. The envy's not there. Are people jealous of Shador? Yeah, maybe. If Shador tweeted that out, I'd be like, okay. Maybe people are a little jealous of Shador. But I did like that his last tweet, which they made clear, they made a note that it was posted by Deion Sanders Jr. After all that hate, it comes the Bible verse now. I pursued my enemies and crushed them. I did not turn back till they were destroyed. I crushed them completely and they could not rise. They fell beneath my feet. 2 Samuel 22:38 through 39. Take us to church, Deion Sanders Jr. I feel like Deion, you know, I don't want to call him a phony. I don't want to call him a phony. I don't want to say anything bad about his faith, but Deion does seem like the person that maybe hides behind it a little bit. Like, hey, I'm going to spew all this negativity, but now I'm going to post this Bible verse to show you actually I'm God's best soldier. He did that same thing when he was a player. Like, there's a story, Sam, where of him getting sued because he had a bunch of car work done. He had a mechanic come and fix a bunch of his cars and do all this. And when the bill came, Deion's like, actually, I'm going to give you half that because God told me to. That's what he told him. He said, God told me I owe you about half of that. Here's $1,500. And that was his excuse. Like, everything he does, he'll always come back. But, well, this is God telling me this. Hey, God told me to tweet all these players and call them bums. This is God. But, hey, again, I appreciate it. I like that we have a sports villain. I don't know who else we have right now to root against. You had a big day for sports villains yesterday. You had Deion Sanders, and you had that boxer, Ryan Garcia, start popping up with some positive PED tests. So we got a couple villains now. We'd been a while because I don't even know who else is on the list. Who do you sports hate right now, Bob?
Zach Edey.
That was quick, Sam. But Zach Edey's done, though.
Yeah, I was going to say you still hate him.
That's what I'm saying. That was our guy.
Fair enough. He could be on the list. I think the rest of the country would agree with that. But now, you know, it's over. It's hard to be one in college, but he did succeed in doing that. You're right. Any other submissions? Because, like, I don't think there's any NFL quarterbacks you really sports hate right now. You know, you had Tom Brady for so long. You don't really have anybody right now in the NFL.
No, you're right. In college basketball, for me, but it's over now, but it was and I respect him coaching-wise, but I'm not a Nate Oates fan. He was a bit of a villain for me.
I'll take that submission. I'll take that. Now, I wonder if that's like sports as a whole or just like Tennessee, because I think like you'll always have your rivals of like your school. But I do think Zach Edey crossed over, Sam. He was hated by pretty much every fan base, it felt like. I don't know if every fan base hates Nate Oates or not, but Tennessee for sure, like on our list, yeah. Hate that guy. The NBA doesn't really have one right now either. I mean, like, LeBron's going to always be that for half the people, but somewhat irrelevant because not hanging around the playoffs anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Draymond was a good one, but they didn't make the, you know what I mean? They weren't around in the playoffs.
Draymond's a good one, too. It still blows my mind when I'm watching these games and I see all these commercials over and over that Draymond has so many commercials.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's not even necessarily charismatic. He's a heel. He's a dirty player. I mean, he punched his teammate. I get he gets the rub from the inside the NBA guys, but, like, it's crazy to me that, like, a guy scoring 5 points a game and punching teammates and, like, you know, getting suspended for hard fouls and cheap plays is getting all these commercials. I don't understand who's watching that and be like, hey, that's the pitch man I want. The audience, they're going to go buy something because they love Draymond Green. And that's kind of mind-blowing to me.
It's true.
They put his kid in there with him, though. Maybe that was it. Like, the kid camping trip where they're going and gives a shout-out to the Timberwolves and Grizzlies. Like, maybe that was the stipulation. It's like, hey, you can do this, but we got to give you your kid in there, soften you up a little bit. Any other submissions, Sam?
I can't think of anything else.
That's what I'm saying. I think we're a little light on villains.
Yeah.
In college sports, we don't really have them either. But now, thank you, Deion Sanders. You are bringing us together. Hate, hate, hate. It's healthy for us. It is in sports. It's what makes sports fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fascinating college football season with him. I mean, and he, you know, just imagine if they win some games and prove people wrong, then he's going to be, I think, that much more insufferable.
Watching them celebrate and talk their talk after beating North Dakota State is going to be pretty funny.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to be like, bro, it's North Dakota State.
I'm kind of rooting for, like, both outcomes. Like, I'd be fine with him. I'd kind of like to see him just completely go all in on everything, or I'd like to see him just crash and burn.
Well, the thing I think we think or is that the crash and burn's coming regardless.
Just matter when.
Yeah, so, like, would it be better if they get out to, like, a 3-0 start and then crash and burn? Yeah, probably. Would it be good if they just lost game one and just sucked all year? That'd probably be pretty good, too. Mm-hmm. The crash and burn is coming. It's Colorado. They can't back it up.
Yeah.
Hour one of the books. We'll kick off hour two of some stories you missed from yesterday. It's called About Last Night. Then we'll talk some Tennessee baseball. Big series starting in Gainesville tonight. We'll talk with Jack Foster. Rocky Top Insider. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Well, we don't have Jack Foster from Rocky Top Insider. You get the snooze. No answer. But we can still talk Tennessee, Florida. Maybe Jack will join us at some point. Tennessee heads down to Gainesville, number three in the country, although coming off of a midweek loss to Lipscomb. We might have him. They head down there tonight. Looks like Chris Stamos is going to take on Pierce Coppola. I just choked on Stamos. I know it's not Stamos.
Stamos.
Yeah, Stamos. I want to always call him Uncle Jesse Stamos, and I was like, no, that's not right, so I went Stamos. I knew that wasn't right. We got Jack now.
It's Roberto.
It's not Jack. Does Roberto have more injury news for us? Because I told all my friends, Cal Stark, big-time injury. Next thing I know, he's hitting home runs in the next series. Tennessee goes down to Florida tonight. Looks like this guy that Florida's throwing, I mean, you just look at his stats.
No, it's not good.
He started three games. He's 0-2, a 10.5 ERA. Seems like somebody, Bob, that should be a get-right game for the team, an offense that hasn't necessarily been performing well the last, you know, four games or so, or really three games. But game one against Missouri, they were awesome. And then, yeah, two and three, they kind of stunk. Should be a little bit of a get-right game. And in the years past, you would look and say left-handed pitching, something Tennessee can't really handle. But that hasn't been the case this year. Tennessee's been really good against lefties.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I want to put some stock into the fact that, you know, when Tennessee bounces back off of a bit of a disappointing loss, Lipscomb definitely fits that bill. But when they lost the opening game in Lexington against Kentucky, they came around on Saturday game two and just went nuts, right? I mean, they had a huge first inning against the Cats, and hopefully we'll see some of that today. It seems, or tonight, it seems like the pitching could line up to benefit things. This Florida team, though, it's interesting. I mean, I was looking at their, you know, the record is obviously not great, but they do have the number one strength of schedule in the country. They've lost some really close series to, you know, most recently Arkansas. They lost that series. But both of the losses, I think, were one-run losses. So they're capable for sure. So this is clearly an important series for the Vols.
Florida and Vanderbilt. Next up on the schedule, we've talked about it. Tennessee needs to go probably 4-2 in these two series if they want to really solidify a top eight seed. We know Tennessee's lineup has been really explosive for most of the year and a little bit of a slump right now. But Sam, how do you view Stamos as a starter, a Friday or a game one? I know tonight's Thursday. game one starter in a big SEC series. Do you have confidence that he's going to come out and kind of continue his success? Does it give you any pause? And he still hasn't really been going deep into games, of course, just kind of been an opener of sorts. You feel good about him getting through that Florida lineup at least early on?
I do, yeah. I think Stamos has been really good in that opener role, and I think that's kind of just what they're asking of him. I don't think they're asking him to go super deep into those games, and I think they've got a pretty nice strategy there on those Friday nights with that opener role. And, you know, I think it's started to work for him, and I think you'll see, you know, I think you'll see Causey after that. I think you'll see Stamos go for as long as he can, hopefully two or three innings, and then, you know, hopefully hand it off to Causey and be able to do some work there deep into the game. But yeah, I have a lot of confidence in Stamos in that opening role, and it seems like this coaching staff does too.
Yeah, like those two guys can usually get you to the eighth inning. Mm-hmm. I think against Missouri, Stamos, he got to what, 2 2/3, yeah, I believe, is what it was.
Yeah, I was going to say 2 1/3 or something like that.
So I think it was 2 2/3, right. And it was scoreless. And then Causey came in. That was a game that your offense gave you a big lead, and you didn't really have a lot of pressure in this game. I don't know what the offense is going to look like in Gainesville. They're going up against a pitcher with a really high ERA that has gotten touched a little bit, but Tennessee also, you know, has been struggling just a little bit at the plate. All right, let's go to the phone lines, 865-288-3131. Let's grab Roberto. Roberto, top of the morning to you.
Top of the morning, Johnny boy.
How are you, my friend?
I stand by my CalStar comments. He was hurt. He's a dirt dog, man. I really thought he was going to miss several games, because any guy who takes that injury, and what the training staff actually told me personally, guy I know on the training staff, I am pleasantly surprised he only missed 2.5 games.
What a dog.
I love him, man. He gets so much crap from our fan base. All he does is show up every freaking day, get behind the dish, catch a hell of a game, throw out runners, and occasionally pop a home run. What's wrong with that from your catcher? On a lineup just stacked with hitters. It doesn't matter.
I feel like Cal Stark has done a lot to win favor with the fan base. I mean, I know last year he was a little bit of a whipping boy. But, like, no, I think he's one of those guys that you look at and you can see improvement. And those are the type of players fans usually really – really gravitate towards, but I thought he's been a lot better this year.
Yeah, and I saw a piece on one of the local stations here where they focused on Cal this week, and he was also talking about last year. You know, he was a little down. You know, could have even thought about leaving, but he was like, "This is his dream. He wants to be a Vol. Wants to play here." You love hearing that story, so I'm happy to hear that. You know, happy to see rather that he's out there delivering to a certain degree too.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's on the trajectory that, you know, you leave as one of the more beloved players whenever you see. And you can, like, obviously see the progression at the plate. And when you hear stuff like that of dream of being a Tennessee player, and then, of course, you're backing it up on the field. And the defense has always been there. But, yeah, like, he's had some timely hitting too.
Well, sometime, John, I'll screenshot and DM you during a game every time he strikes out.
Yeah, I know.
On a bad pitch. I will text you what people are saying.
I'm not saying you're wrong about that. No, I'm not saying that people don't get frustrated during the game. I'm just saying me personally, like, I've really enjoyed Cal Starks. And I think he's, like I said, fitting the bill of a player that you really start actually loving that becomes a fan favorite.
Yeah. Well, if you take away his on-base percentage, his OPS is almost still as high as Cannon Peebles' total OPS. Without his on-base percentage, which is damn near 400. Yeah. So I would just say I'm very pleased with his progression, and he's a catcher that can win you a national championship. He is. He's going to give you as many innings as he can. He's a dirt dog. It's actually not why I called, but I want to focus on Florida. People are going to look at the record. They're going to look that they're a fringe NCAA tournament team right now, which is true. If we take one, it's a good weekend. Guys, it's not a good weekend. It's an acceptable weekend. If we take two, it's a good weekend. They're really good. They really are. The record doesn't show it, but they're a good team.
Yeah, and
they can hit.
We were just talking about it. You know, number one strength of schedule nationally.
Right.
Could have, honestly, with a couple breaks here and there, could have swept Arkansas. I mean, they lost two games.
Swept Arkansas.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, we agree with you, man. They're solid.
Well, the one thing that you know, John, I'd like to you said we need to go 4-2 over the next two series to really solidify a top eight seed. I don't know if I agree with that. I think we need to win probably 4 more games over the next 9.
That wasn't the projections I saw from someone who runs the numbers, that does the baseball RPI and does these permutations.
Mm-hmm.
They put a breakdown out of, you know, road wins versus home wins that Tennessee needs to be comfortably an eight seed, and that's, or a top eight seed, and that's just what they had. They had Tennessee needing to win. If they were only going to win 2 of the non-conference midweek games, they were going to have to find, I believe it was going to be 7 SEC wins.
Oh, I see. Because we lost to Lipscomb.
Correct.
Oh,
because our RPI dropped down to number 8 after that.
Wow, that was pretty bad loss, and that's why Tony had Snead in there at the end trying to get the win, or at least preserve an opportunity to get it. Yeah, that was a bad loss.
Now, if you guarantee me a sweep of South Carolina, then yeah, maybe you just need to go 3-3 on the road, and you know, 6-3 might get you there. But I'm talking about to feel comfortable and kind of lock it in. You're almost looking at 7-2.
21 SEC wins, 21-9 if we win 6. I think every single SEC team that's won at least 18 SEC season games, regular season games, has been a host of a super.
How many times do you think that the 21 wins got you at 3rd or 4th in the conference, though? I can't imagine too many times you finished in 4th place with 21 wins, which would be on the table with Kentucky possibly. But you'd almost assuredly be 3rd place.
And also, Roberto, I feel like maybe the fact that Kentucky on the road is a great series win, but like that's really your only huge road series win
for sure
for the year.
For sure.
I don't know, George. I mean, you're saying
road win.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. You're saying series win on the road.
Yeah, road series win.
Okay. You know, I don't disagree with that. That Kentucky win, especially, gosh, that letting that Friday night game slip really hurts right now after losing to Lipscomb. But I don't know. I guess I'm just going to go with, I think Tennessee really needs to focus on winning 1 game this weekend, and 2, you should feel really good. You sweep Florida, I guess you're it's going to actually improve your RPI, right? Because they're ranked so highly. So.
Yeah, Florida's still number, I believe, 19 last I saw in the RPI, so they're still getting looked at as a top 20 team. So, yeah. Winning 1 game on the road, it's not a failure. I can't go with that being the goal or that being a good weekend, but if you go out there and win 1, it's not the end of the world. But I think Tennessee's in a position with the goals they're chasing that 2 has to be the goal. This is a series that you have to look at winning the series.
I guess we'll see if the last 3 games is more of an apparition, or if we're staring down the barrel of we're slumping bad. I mean, Burke slumping the way he is, and he is really not a positive development for this team. I think he's the best all-around hitter on the team, and it scares me. Guys, have a great day.
Appreciate you, Roberto. I don't feel like there's anywhere really that Tennessee could go where I'm doing backflips or being like happy for 1 road win. I understand like that's always the kind of the goal in the SEC against your teams that feel even in talent, like win 1 on the road and win your series at home and you'll have a good record. But I just think Tennessee like is above that.
They're way too bad of a pitching team to me to be happy with just 1 win this weekend.
Yeah, like if you went down to Arkansas and they're going to have the advantage in almost every every pitching matchup and out of the bullpen, if you're at Arkansas and you say like, hey, would you take 1 win? You'd probably say, okay, yeah. Begrudgingly though, like I wouldn't probably sit here on the day of and say, hey, let's just give me 1. I'll lock that in. I'll take 1-2. I think Tennessee and Vitello bigger than that.
Feels to me like they, you know, tonight should be a win. Game 2, you got Beam going, so I feel pretty good about that, regardless of who Florida throws. And then Game 3 is Caglione, and I'm just looking at his splits. I mean, he's solid, man.
He's nasty.
Yeah, so that may be the one. But, you know, I feel like if they get tonight, and then I feel better about them winning the series if they can just go out and take care of business tonight.
So is Caglione actually nasty at pitching? Because, like, when I look at the numbers, like, he's 5-0, but he gets talked about, or it feels like just because of the at the plate stuff and him being, you know, one of the best players in college baseball. He gets talked about almost like Paul Skeens, but he's not anywhere near that as a pitcher. Like, when I look at his splits, 4.1 ERA, a 1.5 whip. So, like, I don't feel like he's a dominant pitcher. Now, I haven't watched. I'm not going to act like I've watched a lot of Florida and seen what the stuff he actually has and, like, how those stats came to be. But, like, when I see a Game 3 pitcher with a, you know, plus 4 ERA and a whip of 1.5, to me, that means Tennessee should be able to score, you know, 4 or 5 runs in that game, at least.
He's absolutely a better hitter than he is a better pitcher. But
sure, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a...
He's their closest thing to an ace, though,
yeah,
right?
That
was my point.
Sure.
You know.
And that's not saying a ton, I guess, with this Florida pitching.
Yeah,
staff.
I was going to say, being an ace, everybody has to have an ace. It doesn't mean they're an actual, like, traditional shut you down type of guy.
He's got the ability to shut you down in any SEC team, too. But, like, yeah, I don't think he's, like, world-beating stuff pitcher good, you know?
Well, I'm asking because that's the way I've heard him talked about all year.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of what I was
– world-beating hitter than he is a pitcher.
That's kind of what I was bracing for. And someone who, again, I don't keep up with all the other SEC teams and, you know, especially ones like Florida that have been struggling. Like, you know, obviously Skeens, you couldn't hide from him last year. But, like, – the way Caglione's been talked about all year, I was anticipating him to come in with closer to like a 3 ERA or a 2.5 or be like more of a shutdown guy. When I see the numbers, my first initial reaction this morning was,
he's not going to like shut you down. Like just all impossible to get a hit off type guy. Like, you know, with Skeens, what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Felt like it was just like, God, you just have no chance against this guy. Like, he absolutely has the ability to you know, give up some runs.
Like, when I see that those stats, and again, I don't know what his stuff actually looks like, but, like, when I see those stats, I don't think there's any chance in hell he's, like, a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball next year. Or, like, not next year, but just, you know, in the next 3 or 4 years. Like, it feels like maybe they let him be, like, a reliever type of guy. But
I,
like,
think he's just that good of a hitter. He's probably just going to go straight into hitting.
Like, okay, so he might not even pitch at all in the majors. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking he was more like the, you know, they were calling him Shohei Ohtani. And he's not Shohei Ohtani.
No, it's a little confounding, though. 58 strikeouts, 48 innings, opponent batting average 215, but also 35 walks. So,
yeah, that's where I guess where the whip. If he can get the walks down, his whip would look a lot better because he's not giving up as many hits.
Right.
But, yeah, he's not doing the he's not keeping runners off the bases. And just with Tennessee, if you start letting runners on base, all of a sudden those hard hit balls are 2- and 3-run home runs. And so, like, when I see the actual pitching stats, like the game one guy, 10 ERA. Game two, they don't even have the guy listed to be determined. Is somebody coming back from injury? Do we know Sam? Like, do they just like piece it together every Saturday? Do they kind of switch it up? Because game two, like, they don't even have a starter listed yet. And then game three, Caglione, it was a good pitcher, but not anything I'm terrified of.
Yeah.
Tennessee could easily have the pitching advantage in all three matchups.
They got a guy that's has had 8 starts by the name of Liam Peterson. Another guy with 8 starts, Cade Fisher.
Okay.
So maybe one of those two guys, but Peterson's ERA is over 7.
Okay.
And Cade Fisher's is almost 7.
Okay.
So.
Well, Tony talked about that in his, I guess, questions and people ask about the Florida series, and he's kind of trying to do it diplomatically. It almost like he wanted to be like, hey, I don't know what the hell they're doing over there, but they ain't got Frank Anderson. But he's like, hey, you know, I'm looking here and I see their pitching staff. It seems like they got a lot of talent. Basically, I don't know how they aren't necessarily getting people out. He said, I've seen some of the arms, but I'm not in a spot to where I can speak intelligently enough about this guy's pitch or that guy's pitch, but there is an awful lot of talent sitting here in comparison to the record. Okay, these guys should be better. The way I took it, at least. But okay, like, yeah, when I see the actual pitching matchups and the way Tennessee's arms, because, like, we do need to point that out. We've been talking about the lineup struggling a little bit and maybe slumping a little bit, but the arms have been pretty good.
The bullpen's been great for you.
Yeah.
In SEC play.
Yeah, I mean, like, the midweek game, I'm throwing that out because you're trying to find arms and guys aren't necessarily as locked in. But in SEC play, now granted, Missouri kind of stinks. And Missouri also kind of helped you out. Missouri was really, really sloppy. Like, they just looked like such a poorly coached team where they're making so many base running errors. Maybe they could have actually scored some more runs against you. But, like, I feel pretty good about the pitching staff going down to Gainesville tonight. Any final thoughts as we preview this? That's all I got.
Same.
Get off to a good start. Get a win tonight. I think that's really important.
Well, that's something we've struggled in, right? Like, the game ones in these series have not been kind to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Not been kind. You know, the Alabama game was, but then you drop one to Auburn. You drop the first game to Kentucky. Which, credit to the boys, except for the Alabama one, ironically enough, for digging out of a hole against Auburn and against Kentucky and still winning that series. But I don't really want to go to Florida and lose game one, because then you're putting yourself really behind it. And you just don't want two losses in a row. And I feel like if you lose tonight, it means your bats didn't do enough. Because I feel confident that Stamos and Kazi will hold Florida to four runs. If I set Florida's team total at 4.5, you taking over or under?
Maybe the over, honestly.
Taking the over? Okay, where would I need to set it for you to take the under? 5.5? 6.5?
5.5, I think.
So you think they got five runs in them? Okay. Well, when I look
You can get like a 7-5 win tonight.
Okay, well, I was going to say, when I look at the pitcher that Florida's throwing, like, Tennessee should score more than that, in my opinion.
Tonight's the only easy watchable game. It's on ESPN or ESPN2.
I believe it's ESPN.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it's ESPN.
And then it's plus, and it'll be the Florida announcers for the next two games.
I kind of like that. I'm curious to see how they are. I like hearing the homers.
Yeah.
As long as we're winning. Yeah, Florida, I mean, this is a team fighting for their lives. Fighting for their lives. We'll come back. We'll talk some Tennessee basketball. I don't know if you guys saw Rick Barnes and saw his quotes, but I think Rick let the chopper spray a little bit.
Yeah.
I think Rick let the chopper spray. We'll talk about that. Jonas Adu sitting there sick reading this. Stick with us. Rick Barnes let the chopper spray yesterday just with one statement. One statement was all it took. One line was all it took, I think, to really drive point the home of how Rick Barnes is feeling about his departing big men, probably one in particular. But when Rick Barnes was asked about new transfer Felix Akpara, Rick Barnes said, and I quote, "He brings us a physicality that we love to have that we haven't consistently had there in the post. He impressed me with the fact that he's got a really competitive edge about him, and that's going to fit in well with our guys. He brings us a physicality that we love to have that we haven't consistently had."
Yeah, that's about as tough a jab as you'll see from Rick, and it's absolutely a message.
When you see the video, and that was on, I don't know what exactly, was that on Orange and White Nation?
WAT.
Okay,
yeah.
Orange and White Nation. I want to give proper credit there. And when you see the actual video, Rick looks a little flushed in the face, which means that I think he's a little mad as he's talking about it. So I don't know if that's the case. I mean, I've got rosacea. Sometimes I look flushed in the face. I'm not casting stones. But like the screenshot I have that I've taken of the video, Rick looks pissed off because he is red in the face. And when you see that quote to it, it makes it look more like a shot than maybe it actually is. But to me, it seemed like a nuke that he dropped on. Because Rick, like you said, not usually going to do that to people.
Yeah.
At least like Rick Barnes, when he first got here, did that to players. I feel like Rick did kind of take shots at his own players that were still on the team. Like, he was always kind of trying to push some buttons and get some guys focused and motivated and would talk about their failures. But I feel like the last 3 or 4 years, that hasn't really been the case. Like, Rick's been pretty complimentary of his guys. Jonas in particular. Like, last year I thought he went out of his way at all times to kind of compliment Jonas and try to kind of maybe will him into being a dominant big.
No, I agree. I mean, again, you and I talked with him about Jonas early in the season because Jonas was flourishing at that point. And he told us how he took Jonas aside and said, "You can be as good as these guys you're going up against. It's really on you." And, you know, I think I agree. I think that may be why you heard a little bit of a comment like that yesterday, is I think he felt like he did everything in his power to lift Jonas up, and, you know, didn't work out. So I don't know. It's and I think back to that press conference. It was, what, 2 weeks ago today where he talked about Tobe and said, you know, we love Tobe, but he's got to make his mind up. I still stand by what I'd been hearing, too. I think Barnes had made his mind up. I think he probably knew Tobe was gone, you know, but just tried to take the high road there. But every man's got his limits. So, yeah, I think yesterday there was some subtlety there, but I think we all understand the subtext of the quote.
It seems, like I said, a nuke dropped on his head because it was what the fan base has been begging for when it came to Jonas Adu. Physicality. And it was something that frustrated the fan base when you've got that lack of physicality. So if I'm Jonas, and like all the reports were like, hey, he was distraught after the game. You know, people that were there, that people were watching on TV actually were like, hey, you could see how sad he looked on the bench. Some friends that were at the game said that they saw him, like, you know, kind of head in his towel, walk into the locker room, kind of inconsolable after the game, crying. So, like, I imagine this is one of those things, Bob, that Jonas knows deep down is true. Jonas knows he's not physical enough. It's probably something the coaching staff has begged him to do and tried to motivate him to do behind the scenes. But, like, it's one of those things, like, where you know somebody's deepest, darkest secret. You know what actually gets under their skin more than anything, and then that's the thing you use to argue with them. Oh, yeah, well, your mom's crazy. How about that? You know how I feel about my mother. Don't say that. You know we don't have a great relationship. And that's essentially what Rick Barnes has done to the public. Like, he's taken that insecurity that I imagine Jonas has as a player, because how couldn't he? He sees what happens in the games. He's got a good front row seat to him. He saw the Zach Edey show. And Rick Barnes talked about that. And now, you know, basically, not only did he say, like, hey, Jonas has been soft, but he's like, yeah, this new guy's not going to be soft. This is what we need on this team. This is what fits our guys. The guys who are tough enough to stay, they want toughness. They want physicality. The players that are still here. We didn't get that last year. I doubt Tobe feels too bad about it because Tobe was too physical.
Yes, he was.
Tobe's probably like, hey, that's the other guy. He's talking about Jonas there, not me. Not me, but apparently Awaka said in his media availability with Arizona that he just felt that the offense at Arizona fit him better. I don't know what the hell that means. It wasn't like Ballo was shooting any jumpers or anything. Like, I don't know what it necessarily means. I thought Tennessee ran plenty of action for Awaka when he was in the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think different players, but Arizona, you know, they worked it into Ballo a lot, so maybe Tobe's thinking that can be me, you know? I don't know.
I mean, I think Awaka, maybe I'm wrong, you know, not going to claim to be a basketball coach, but, like, I thought Awaka was pretty damn dangerous out on the perimeter with pick and rolls. Like, I thought his athleticism and getting him downhill, I thought was maybe him at his best. Now, is he a guy that you could throw the ball down to and let him bang against some people? Sure, but, like, I don't know how successful he's going to be against starting centers that are going to be bigger. Because a lot of Awaka's minutes would be, like, you know, as the game was flowing and maybe you're dealing with some backups and things like that. From the get-go starting, can he handle being a starting center at 6'8" that's going to be just getting the ball dumped down to him in the post? I don't know. I thought his athleticism was maybe his biggest strength at times, and I thought Tennessee did a good job of getting him out there with Dalton and Zakai and getting him moving.
Well, we're going to find out. I mean, he's going into some pretty competitive territory in the Big 12 now, too. You know, he's going to be going against good teams. He's going to get his wish. I think he's going to get a lot of run with Arizona. But I don't know. I'll be interested to watch that. And I'll be interested to watch Adu at I'm still not convinced Adu at Arkansas with Cal is going to work that well.
I don't know how it's going to work for Cal. I don't know how it's going to work for Adu and Awaka, but I do think there is a very real possibility that you should be preparing for both of those guys to have, like, really good numbers. Like, I think it's possible that Cal unlocks Jonas and kind of figures some things out and that Jonas has another all-SEC type of season. You know, it wouldn't shock me if Jonas was first-team all-SEC next year. And it wouldn't surprise me if Awaka got out to Arizona and got more post-ups and just played more minutes and got more shots, and that Awaka didn't kind of morph into that 15 points a game, 13 rebound guy. Like, I think those are both pretty realistic possibilities.
I think from like a box score perspective, like, you could see Okpara have like the worst stat line of all three of those guys, but he will have the better impact of the team, I think, of all three too.
Well, I would say I don't think I could see it. I think I would predict that. Like, I feel pretty confident that Okpara will have the worst box score counting numbers. Like, when it comes to points and rebounds, now I think he'll lead them in blocks. You know, I think you could probably, I don't want to say pencil him in for two blocks a game, but like, I feel like that's kind of the expectations I have for him next year. But impact, yeah, like, he should be on better teams. I think Tennessee should be better than both Arizona and Arkansas, but he's also going to be in charge of doing the important stuff and anchoring a defense that should be the highest-ranked defense of the three teams. So, yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Sam, but, like, I would just go a step further. I would bet a lot of money that he has the worst stats of those three guys. But I think that's okay. Like, Jonas probably needs to be a 14 to 15 points a game scorer at Arkansas. Awaka's probably going to need to be a 14 or 15 points a game scorer if Arizona's going to be any good. Or at least like a 12, 13 rebound a game type of guy, if he's able to stay on the court with foul trouble. I don't think Tennessee's going to need Okpara to do anything other than protect the rim and grab rebounds. Catch some lobs, score 6 points a game. Maybe 10. If you can get up to 10, that'd be awesome. Like, I would lock that in a hurry. Like, if you told me he averaged 9 points, 7 points a game, I'd say, deal, banker, yeah. Deal.
I agree with that. I also think if one of his criteria for transferring was he wanted to shoot the three more, I mean, Cal's conducive to that with his offense, but they also have Big Z, who has shown he can shoot the three, and I just don't know if there's room for two big guys doing that. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what little ZD is going to get minutes-wise. I mean, I imagine Adu's going there to be a starter and be the main guy. But, like, yeah, if you have 28 minutes or so, 30 minutes, which really would equal 40 minutes combined of your center that can be versatile and shoot, I think Cal would like that.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to really share the court together. So, like, I think maybe it's a thing of, like, hey, we're going to run the same exact offense, or our center can shoot the ball at both positions. Maybe Adu does get to shoot a lot of threes. I just don't think that was, like, something that he wasn't allowed to do at Tennessee. I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, maybe I don't know what goes on behind the scenes. I don't know if Barnes was yelling at him, like, hey, that's not your shot. Get your ass in the post. Or if he just said, hey, I'm missing a couple, I'm not going to shoot them anymore. I don't know. There's a chance he works his ass off on it this offseason and becomes a better three-point shooter and hits shots next year that he wouldn't have hit this year. And then it'll be like, hey, we give Coach Cal that credit, but really it was Adu just actually getting better at it. You think Barnes, real quick, while on the way out, do you think Barnes cared that Adu ended up at Arkansas? Do you think he looked at that as like any more of a betrayal? I know the fans here did, but I wonder if the coaches did.
You know what I think is he probably views it as he's a kid. He made a decision. I don't agree with it. What I've been wondering about is how does Barnes feel about it relative to his relationship with Cal?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I don't think Adu hit the portal to just go to Cal. Like, I think it'd be different if he felt Cal was tampering. I don't think that's what happened. I think Barnes probably trusts Cal to take care of him, because they're always talking about how good of friends they are.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think there'd be any hard feelings, because I don't think it was tampering from Cal.
No, I agree with that.
Hour two in the books. Hour three coming at you. Stick with us. Hour number three kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Hour three of the morning show. Saw a lot of my Braves fans freaking out yesterday, Bob. Give me the sports media take on what's going on with Bally Sports, because I saw that Comcast seems to have dropped them. Is that what's happening there? They're doing the contract negotiations, and Bally doesn't seem to necessarily be positioning themselves in a position of strength, it feels like, just because I feel like, isn't Bally Sports kind of going away? Isn't that like,
well, yeah, they're
the rumors?
Yeah, so Bally is owned by a new group called Diamond Sports, and so they had a carriage agreement with Comcast. Now they've actually, in fairness to Bally/Diamond, they have re-upped with Charter, they've re-upped with DirecTV. So they have new carriage agreements in place with those entities. But they didn't with Comcast. And Comcast is one of the 400-pound gorillas in this space still. And this is what happens. I mean, I've sat in these kind of meetings in the past. And, you know, you have both sides. You know, you've got the content creator. In this case, that's Bally, who's producing the games. You know, they have to pay a very, very healthy rights fee, number two Major League Baseball, for example, to have the rights for those games. So then they're asking for this amount of money from the carrier. In this case, it's Comcast. Comcast is saying, well, we, you know, they're always going in when their job is to spend as little as possible. And now they feel like they've got Bally over a barrel because they've filed for bankruptcy. There's all sorts of things swirling around them. There's talk of they may be an acquisition target by Amazon at some point. So what's happening is Comcast is saying, you're not that important, and we're going to, you know, unless you accept our, you know, our bit of what we'll pay you in a new deal, we're going to take you off. Bally's saying no. The problem is the loser in this obviously is the consumer.
Sure.
Because
I still remember losing out on the first week of college football because Spectrum and ESPN were arguing.
Yeah, and you typically don't see any discounting go into your cable bill or, you know, either. That's the
they
other
gave
problem.
Me, I think, $15 off for the month for losing out on a week and a half of ESPN, I think is what they gave me.
Yeah.
But nothing long term. The bill actually got more expensive. It went from like $170, $180 for internet and TV up to like $212 now. So like I keep wanting to actually just finally cut the cord and get rid of them, but I just never actually go through with it. But like I was very ready to do it during football season, but then they got the ESPN back on. I was like, ah, that's too much of a hassle. I'll wait.
Yeah. You know, I've had a couple people asking me, like, how long do you think this will last? And it really depends. I mean, in some instances, because I used to go through this with HGTV and Food Network, and it would be funny. We'd get those resolved, you know, where we actually decided to step off of a carrier, you know, whether it was a Comcast or someone else. We made the decision of, no, we're not accepting your bid. You're not taking us off. We're not going to be there. We're pulling our signal. It didn't last very long there. There was only a couple of weeks. Sports is very different. It can drag out for a long time.
Now, were you in those negotiations, like handling those?
I have been before. Yeah. You know, not in the deepest parts of the negotiations, but I've been in there before where you're in there talking about what your service offers. And, it's pretty nasty, man. I remember one time, and this was back when I was running some networks, and it's a tough blow, but it's just part of the gamesmanship. There was a Comcast, and it was Comcast. It was one of their execs who buys the programming, so to speak, and just said, you know, I'm watching your network. It's not very good.
I was going to ask if they ever just pulled out. You suck. We don't really need you. Now, you can't really do that to ESPN.
Yeah.
But you can do it to maybe even Bally Sports. Like, hey, you got the Braves. Basketball season's over. But, like, outside of that, we don't need to watch your fishing show. We're good.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of that that would happen. And then we'd counter with, okay, well, we know we have a passionate consumer base, and you're underestimating the magnitude of what that means, and you're also underestimating what we'll do. I mean, it's like Russian roulette to a degree. Both sides are playing that game.
Now, who usually wins? Because I know the consumer loses. I know that when the rates go up, the prices go up. Like I know that we're never getting discounts. I know that whenever a station gets dropped, they don't change the monthly bill and make it lower in the long term. So I know who the losers are, but who usually wins in the negotiation?
Usually it's the distributor. And
so by distributor, you mean the Comcast?
In this case, it would be Comcast. Okay. You know, another great example of that is, and this has gone on for over a year now, is I'm a YouTube TV customer, and they dropped MLB Network a while back. It was over a year ago, and they've never reinstated it. And they don't really care what the consumer thinks. They were like, no, you're asking for too much money. We're not going to pay it. And eventually, I think they'll come back. But again, it's been a year since they've reached any sort of terms, and they haven't yet.
Now, does ESPN win these arguments? Like, do they win? Because I feel like they're a powerful enough brand where maybe the sports fan is so crazy, and they do have their already kind of their over-the-top offering in place, where maybe the Comcast of the world actually have to kind of bend the knee there. Because that's the way I've always viewed it, is like you can't have a cable company without ESPN, because that's kind of the only reason to still have cable for a lot of people is the live sports.
No, I agree, and I think they do win, and they do stand the chance in this new future if they really decide to try to break off and do their own, not this other sports streaming super team thing we talk about. If ESPN does their own streaming service that is exclusively theirs, they could win even more, because what they're talking about doing is, again, it's almost like what we talk about with the SEC and the Big Ten breaking off from the NCAA. It's the same kind of thing that they're talking about doing as far as breaking away from linear cable and satellite.
This may be a really dumb question, but would the Comcast, the Spectrum of the worlds that also provide internet, is there ever a future where if ESPN does just completely break free, that, let's just say, Comcast internet could ban carrying ESPN services? Like, I don't know how that works, because I mean, like, I've always wondered that, like,
Trump card.
Well, I've always wondered, like, if I cancel Spectrum's TV but I keep the internet, like, are they going to be mad? Like, are they going to, like, throttle me? Like, what's going to happen there? Because, like, the internet bundle is kind of important, but if you just remove the cable out of it and it's just the internet, like, how do they react? So I'm wondering, from a different perspective, if Comcast is like, you think you have the power, ESPN, you're just going to be internet only. Well, how about these places with Comcast internet? We're not going to let you be on there. We hold the actual Trump card.
So like an internet blackout.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, is that ever possible? I feel like that would be, obviously a PR nightmare, but like it does. I wonder if it's the ultimate Trump card.
Yeah, I don't have an answer to that. I don't know if they can even do that, and I don't mean legally. I don't know if they can technically do
that. And if you
can
block certain IPs.
Yeah, I mean, you can. Right? They call it, the term's called geofencing. You can do that, like in territories. It's usually about international versus domestic and
sure.
things like that.
Blackouts, like where you're at if you're watching games.
Right, but yeah, that'd be interesting for sure.
It just feels like they would have the ultimate Trump card. Like, yeah, you can do your little streaming, that's all cool, but like they're not going to be able to watch it on their TV or on our internet, damn it. Absolutely not. But hope they got LTE. Hope they got 5G.
I got to hand it to Comcast, though. The other thing, I'm not sure I'd go out and buy one, but, they partnered with somebody. They're manufacturing Xfinity TVs now.
Really?
So they can get into the game of, if you have a smart TV and, point being, they recognize you can do this without cable. So we need to get into that business then and manufacture these TVs where the apps are built in already.
So essentially you don't have to worry and mess with the box.
Yeah.
You can kind of cut out the equipment.
Yeah, exactly. And it's embedded with their, I think it's called, Xfinity Plex, or I don't know what it's called, but they have their own kind of streaming box that's similar to Roku already, and it would be built into the TV.
I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, it's just starting to come out, and I forget which manufacturer. I want to say maybe Vizio is who they partnered with. But
so circling back around to Bally Sports, like, is it dying? Is it dead? Is it going away? Because I'm unsure of what the future for it is. Like, I know what the Hawks, they were talking about. Some of that stuff's all going to get bought up by Amazon, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. They need a lifeline thrown to them, basically, because they're they have significant financial hardship, part of that was it used to be managed by Sinclair Broadcasting, which was probably not the right match for a business as high stakes as regional sports networks are. The other thing that's interesting, and this is all kind of coming full circle, is more and more we're seeing it happen. It's not happening with Major League Baseball yet, but there's this whole notion of getting rights for sporting events back on local TV stations, and or TV station groups. I talked about it last week with the WNBA that Tegna, who owns WBIR here locally, but owns a ton of stations across the country. They're starting to buy into WNBA games that they can, that they can air on their local network of, their network of local stations around the country. So that then you start, it's so funny because all that stuff used to go the way of cable, and now some of it's coming back. We're seeing it in other markets with like the NHL out in Las Vegas and Phoenix. Well, they're moving out of Phoenix, but I think the Suns are on local, have a lot of games on local TV there too. So
I think they had all their games on local TV.
So it's really getting fragmented back to, back to kind of olden times. And, keep hanging on to your TV. Some of this stuff you're not going to be able to necessarily stream, but, I think there's going to be more and more of that, and it's confusing as hell because it's scattered everywhere. But back to your question about Bally, Amazon seems like the likely suitor. They have a ton of money. They could overspend for it if they need to, and then they can, you know, they're making it no secret. We've talked about their interest in the NBA. They're already doing it with the NFL. They want to get into sports and get in deep.
You talk about keeping your TV. Sam, how many physical copies of DVDs do you have?
In Knoxville with me right now?
No, you can say back at home. This is, how many do you consider? If I said, what's your movie collection? Like, how many DVDs do you own?
I think I'd be confident in saying I got at least 15.
Okay. Bob, what about you?
I got rid of a lot of them, but I'm down to it. It's funny. I was just doing some house cleaning on Sunday, and I saw them in a cabinet. I got maybe 20.
Okay. Got a lot of my favorite movies. I used to love going to McKay's and just walking around and like, oh, here's one of my movies I love. I'm gonna buy this, you know, $3 or whatever. So I probably got like 40. But like, I haven't bought a new one. Like, the newest movie I probably have is like 2008, 2009. I used to, like, you know, want to have like a little bit of a DVD collection, kind of like a book collection. But like, you know, I don't have a DVD player hooked up. But I do wonder, like, you know, some of these favorite movies, like, one day they're just not going to be on streaming and you're just not going to have access to it. And, like, the DVD companies are kind of stopped producing, you know, mass DVDs, and you're not going to have a copy. Like, there's going to be so much art that we actually lose. Like, I was reading about that months ago with these TV shows and these, like, I think it was in particular, like, when Warner Brothers was dropping, like, Batgirl and, like, all those things, all those, like, movies that they kind of canceled and, like, got off the programming, and people were like, well, someone worked years on that, and like, it's just never going to get released, and it's gone. And like, all this stuff that like people like and people care about, like, it's just gone. They didn't do any physical copies of it, and like, if it's not on streaming, it just doesn't exist. And that concept to me was kind of crazy. Whenever you're talking about keep your TV, made me think of the DVDs, because
I think CDs make a comeback one day, like people going to buy like vinyl records and stuff like that.
I mean, vinyl records, I got a lot of people in my life that buy vinyl records of things, and I don't do that. As far as buying CDs, I mean, I haven't bought a physical CD since, I mean, maybe like Kanye West dropped Yeezus like in 2012. Like, that might have been the last CD I bought, maybe. And that was like kind of a meta commentary on it. It was like the CD was just a blank disc. There was no booklet or nothing. It was just a case and a CD because, you know, obviously, like, CDs aren't important anymore. I did see in Target. I was in Target recently, and, like, Taylor Swift did have, like, physical CDs there. And I know every time I'm in Cracker Barrel, they got all those CDs there. But, like, outside of that, like, I don't know any people actually buying just CDs anymore. I haven't. I haven't bought an album since Kanye, and, like, maybe I digitally bought, like, a Mac Miller CD, like, in 2014. Just, like, hey, I support him. Here's my $10. But, like, outside of that, I just stream music. And I like supporting the artists I like, so like that's why I go to so many concerts. So like that's kind of me buying the album as far as I'm concerned. It's like, here's, you know, $100 for a concert.
Yeah, because they're not making money on the streaming.
Right, not really. That's what they always, you know, complain about. But yeah, I haven't bought a physical CD.
You know, you reminded me of something I did. This is back to DVDs. Because I had a bunch. I had a lot more than 20, and I decided I want to get rid of them in the way, but I wanted to keep some of the movies, so I went to this service at the time was called Vudu, V-U-D-U, and now it's Fandango. But by all accounts, it looks like I was able to upload those all to the cloud.
So kind of like an iTunes library type thing?
Exactly, and then I could just get rid of them, you know, and they're still there, you know. It's yeah. But what's crazy is I do all that, and I've maybe watched one of those movies.
I use Plex a lot, which is similar. You can upload, like, to Plex and have, like, your catalog there. But, like, you know, if I'm ever in a place, A, where I don't have internet, or B, that goes away, like, there's going to be so many movies that I just no longer have. I don't think I've ever bought a Blu-ray. That's how long it's been since I bought, like, an actual physical DVD. I don't think I ever bought one since they upgraded the technology.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever bought a Blu-ray. I've rented one from, like, Redbox before.
And it's crazy. Now, if you go to McKay's and you go to – I offloaded all my CDs a while back, almost all of them. And they were like, yeah, you can leave them here. We're not giving you – you know, they gave me, like, $3 or something. I mean, it was nothing. It's just – that stuff's just not valuable.
It's essentially like dropping your clothes off at Goodwill and like, hey, here you go. Like, it's really just us doing you a favor of getting it out of your house.
Exactly.
We got the space.
Yeah.
I can't imagine buying a CD from McKay's. That'd be too scary in terms of like it being scratched up and everything. Like, the DVD kind of does that too, but I don't know. I don't browse the CDs near as much as I do the the movies. Maybe it's just because Spotify is everything's on there. I don't know.
Well, if you're, you know, I was helping out Russell with the drive yesterday when we were out in Sevierville, and he's a big Braves fan, and he's a Comcast customer, and he is frustrated. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. I got the, because YouTube TV, as I mentioned, doesn't have MLB Network. I miss my baseball. And so I've subscribed to the MLB.TV app, which is fantastic. It's really great. But they still black out Braves games. So, I mean, you really are. And if you're like a hardcore Braves fan and you're a Comcast customer, you need to listen to the games on Fan Run Radio. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to have access to them. And again, I don't know. That situation, that stalemate could end in a week or two. But it very well may not. And if it doesn't resolve in a couple of weeks, then it could go on for a very long time. There's no in between.
Streameast.io. The illegal streams. That's what you'll have to do. The illegal streams. I don't know if I liked. It feels like a bad decision, but also I get it. Like at 2:00 yesterday, Bally Sports Help. We are pleased to announce that we have just reached a multi-year distribution agreement with DirecTV to continue carriage of Bally Sports. Combined with the recently announced multi-year renewals with Charter and Cox Communications, customers will have continued access to live, local MLB and NBA and NHL games.
They're just trying to piss off the Comcast customers.
Yeah, but I feel like that's not going to go well for them. Like, there's going to be, like, the reply is like, get back on YouTube TV, you bleeps. Don't care. Nobody has DirecTV anymore. To which the DirecTV bot replies to, hi there, we value your feedback. Don't care. Sign with Xfinity. Just sell to Amazon already. What about Xfinity? When exactly would you say was the moment you decided to be this terrible? Question from the fan. So, like, yeah, like, tweeting that out, like, ha, 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 here you go. Here you go, Xfinity. We're going to stick it to you. But then the replies are not going to ever side with either entity. Like, it's just going to be like, all they want is, like, if Comcast tweeted that, they'd say the same thing. Like, you're never going to win whenever people just don't have their content. They're just going to be mad at both parties.
Yeah, but what Bally's trying to do is, you know, again, common ploy is, like, if you love your Braves and you love Bally, you got to either switch or you got to speak up and be vocal with Comcast.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest. Whenever I told you I missed out on college football the first week, I wasn't really mad at ESPN. I was mad at Spectrum. So, I mean,
yeah.
I guess Bally kind of knows that. Hey, you love your Braves. You want to watch Ronald Acuna strike out? Sign up. Sorry, that was mean.
That was mean.
I know.
He had a good game.
He had a good game yesterday. Yeah, he did. He did. All right. Thank you for the information, Bob. Always appreciate sitting with a sports media expert and becoming smarter at those things. We'll switch gears. Stick with us.